Welcome to Brains, Bibles, and Beyond, where we discuss theology and worldview apologetics with our budding theologians. I am Nate Day from Think Like Christ Ministries, and I'm here with our resident theologian, Joel Willoughby.
How do you do?
With Brains and Bibles. That guy.
Hey, if you'd like to find out a little more info about our ministries, you can always go to brainsandbibles.com for mine, and then thinklikechrist.org for Nate's over here, and you'll see all the upcoming going-ons of everything.
Yes, and we are glad to have our budding theologians here to think along with us. If you find our content beneficial, please like and subscribe. Give us a 5-star review on whichever platform you listen. I think currently we are on a few of them. Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts,
yep.
And of course YouTube.
Right.
And more will be coming. More may already be come when you view this. So,
if you had some kind of question or something for us, you can use the address podcast@thinklikechrist.org. And that would be any kind of a suggestion, question, or anything like that. And if we get enough cues, we'll might even do like a little Q&A short to answer some things or make even a whole other episode about something you may ask.
Yeah. So please email us. We love questions. We love, correcting Joel's theology.
That's right.
And everything goes along with that. So anyway, for the last two podcasts, we've been exploring the goodness of God. Is God good?
Yes.
And today we're going to look again. This is our third episode on Is God Good? Next month, we're going to wrap it up with episode 4 and wrap it all together, trying to come to some conclusions. There are, some seeming contradictions, and we're kind of exploring through those. Today, we are looking at the element of man's choices in this whole idea of God's goodness and evil existing, and where does that all fit together? So obviously we're not going to come to a conclusion yet, but we're just kind of exploring some known truths, things like, God is good, God is powerful, we believe in the sovereignty of God,
right?
And yet evil and suffering and bad things still exist. How do all these fit together? How does that work? How can God be good and evil still be here? So,
right. Let's go ahead and start talking about some of those attributes there.
Yes.
Now, if you're a regular theology type person, you know all about the big three omnis, omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient. But maybe if you're not quite there yet, let me help you out with that. Those are big three popular things that describe God, and I'll identify what we mean by that and, with the idea of God being good. So omnipotent, omni means all, and that potent is like power, right? So omnipotent means he has all power. So you think, well, why is there evil and suffering? If he's all powerful, he can just stop it. That's interesting. Then you think, he's omnipresent. He's everywhere. So when there's evil and suffering, he's there with it. He's around it. And then omniscient, he's all-knowing. So he knows about it. He's aware. It's not like his back is turned and he's clueless as to what's going on. So he has power. He's there and he's aware. He's also wise. So it's not like he has a lack of knowledge or understanding or ability at all to stop evil and suffering.
Yeah. So and along with that, then God is also holy and God is loving and God is good. And that's the question. How can God be a holy God? How can God be a loving God? How can God be good and allow the evil and allow the suffering and allow the pain? How can God be faithful and allow all this? And the faithfulness of God, the consistency, God is always consistent, but yet, why? Why does sometimes it not appear that way? Why can God be a good God who loves me and allows all the evil around me and the pain and the suffering and all these bad things that can happen in each and every one of our lives? No one it has been excluded from the suffering and the pain. So anyway, we're going to continue to look at that. We just want to kind of bring in the attributes of God a little bit more.
Right.
And we're just going to do a quick little recap of the last couple weeks and just kind of make sure, or last couple months, and make sure everybody's up to speed on what we've been discussing. So
yeah, the big idea, the big tension that we have here is that God is good. That's one fact. Another fact is evil and suffering exists. And so that's what I like to call a seeming contradiction. It seems to contradict itself, but knowing that God is good, the Bible is perfect and sufficient to give us all answers, we understand that there is a solution. So I want to help you find this solution biblically, accurately. So, you know, it's a couple foundational ideas here. You know, how can God be all those things and suffering exist? Well, it's definitely something to consider. You don't want to just say, you know, kind of sweep it under the rug and say, hey, well, you know, we can just trust God. He's good, right? And move on and not actually think about it. I think it's good to think about it because I think in the end of it all, God is actually even more glorified.
Yeah.
When we really see who he is and understand these things. You know, we always want to seek truth at all costs. You never want to turn off your brain when it comes to God and the Bible.
Yeah.
Because you want to love him with all of your mind. You're really engaging in things. And God can hold up to any level of scrutiny.
Yeah, it's always okay to ask the tough questions.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's okay not to understand or know the answer, which is why, you know, we can study and look into it deeper. You know?
Right.
Sometimes the answer is, I don't know. And then therefore you study more.
You
look
that.
And you try to figure out the correct answer. So, but it's always okay to ask questions. God does not mind questions.
Absolutely.
Sincere questions.
Right. Yeah, you see that all over the Psalms, things like that. You have 65 books of the Bible where God's talking to us. In Psalms, we talk to God. And, you know, David mainly, there's other psalmists there too, but has the raw emotion, just expresses themselves. And so you see how that is okay. God can handle that sort of thing. It's healthy as long as there is a, you know, not a doubting, scoffing type question, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, sort of questioning God versus asking God a question.
Yeah.
So there's certainly a difference.
Let's go ahead and start recapping what good and evil is. And,
yeah.
So let me talk about good a little bit here. Now, we've already, if some of this you think, well, you need to explain that a little bit more, we'll just go back and listen to the other episodes because we do. We do talk about it more. But just a quick little recap here on what good is.
What is good?
One big idea, we went through Genesis 1 and 2 in the very beginning there. We saw the word good mainly has the idea of like harmony. So as God created, each thing he created was in harmony with him. You know, the other idea of good is just things are not harmful. You know, they're not, nothing is evil or it has any kind of defect. There's no suffering, none of that sort of thing as well. So none of that. The standard of good then is objective, universal, and consistent. What we found out in the other couple episodes is that God is that standard, him alone. God is good.
Yeah.
What about evil, Nate?
So with evil, a lot of times when we're asked to define evil, like if you were to stand up in front of a crowd and you say, hey, someone raise your hand, what is evil? And typically the answers are all examples of evil. People will come up, well, you know, a tornado wiping out a trailer park, or, you know, or getting in a car crash, or, you know, a baby dying at childbirth, or, you know, having to bury a son, or all kinds of examples, right? And what happens is we just get examples. And this evil is one of those things that's hard to define, you know, because it's not necessarily something itself. You know, and one concept is that evil is actually the absence of good. But that's not quite correct or accurate. Because really, evil is the corruption or the perversion of something good. So in the beginning, God created everything and he made it good. Man had choices. So at the very beginning, God created man to love him. And because God is love, he wanted us to love him. Well, the only way to have love is to have the ability to choose love. Without man's ability to make a choice to love God, it'd just be coercion. It's not love if God makes us love him. So God gave us choices. He gave us a choice to love him or not to love him. He gave us a choice to obey him or not obey him. And at the beginning, there was one rule.
Right.
Don't eat that tree. We had a choice, and we chose as a human race to eat of that tree. And, you know, that's what brought evil into the world. So we made a choice as a human race, and that brought evil in. And from that, there was a corruption that happened. Everything was corrupted. Now our perspectives are changed. That sin and death came into the world, and so forth. And so when we choose or prioritize something or someone above God, then that is evil.
That's right. Yeah, it truly is. So then now, kind of getting to the more new material, is the idea of suffering itself. Okay, so there's evil and suffering. They usually are considered together, and because they tend to go together. Once there is evil, there is guaranteed to be suffering. That's just how it is. So, you know, what is suffering? I just say, you know, the pain and problems that result from evil. It's a part of the consequences. There is even more consequences to evil, but suffering is definitely a big part of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, where does it come from? I narrow it down just a few places. Really, the curse of original sin, that's Genesis 3, and that's what Nate was just talking about with eating of the fruit, and there was these consequences. There's also the worldwide flood, a curse there. And I'd love to talk about the worldwide flood more in another episode, but we'll just leave it there for now. The earth was cursed, and there are results from that. Then also just, you know, just the idea that once there is evil and then suffering from that, it's just this continuous perpetual cycle of more evil and more suffering. And it just keeps going, going, going. We see it even generationally with families. A lot of times, just choices have consequences.
Yeah. You got to remember, God did not author evil. When God got done creating the world, it was perfect.
Right.
Right. We got done. And after he made Adam and Eve, he said, it is very good. That was what God made. We messed it up and brought sin, brought evil, brought suffering into the equation. So this was not God's creation that was evil.
Right, right. You know, I always think a good, helpful illustration of who, you know, who authored, who really caused sin, evil, suffering, all that sort of thing. I think of, you know, even sunshine. You can consider this, you know, the sun, that's what brings us light and heat physically, brings us light and heat. So on the other side of the earth, you know, as the earth, obviously a little science lesson here, the earth goes around the sun, the earth rotates, right? And so there's a part of the earth the sun is hitting. The other part, there's nothing, right? And so is the sun authoring the darkness and cold? Well, of course not, right? It authors the light and heat. It causes that. So the sun doesn't cause the darkness and cold. It's rather the absence of the sun that makes everything naturally dark and cold. That's what space is like. If there was no stars, it would all just be cold and dark. It's the stars that bring the heat and the light. So in the same sense, the world left to itself is just evil and it would suffer. But it's God's presence, God's intervention, God's action with mankind that actually brings goodness and love and everything that he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all over the Bible, we have choices.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the examples we want to look at today as far as choices go is the choices that Abraham made. So, you know, going back to Genesis and talk about that, you know, we already mentioned the flood, mentioned Adam and Eve. You know, there's all kinds of examples of people making good choices and bad choices. You know, certainly Adam and Eve made a choice to eat of the tree, but then they made a choice to believe that the coming Messiah was going to come and believe that God had a plan for redemption. You know, you had Cain and Abel. You know, Abel made a choice to worship God the way God said he wanted to be worshiped. Cain made a choice to not, and then he made the choice to kill his brother. You know, Noah building the ark. Noah had the choice to obey God and build the ark, or choice not to. He chose to obey. So there's good choices and there's bad choices. But we come to Abraham, and Joel's going to kind of pick this up here in Genesis 1. But basically, what it came down to was, you know, Abram at the time, his name had not been changed yet, was called by God to leave where he was and go to what's going to become the promised land, right? And so in Genesis 12, 1, if you want to read that, Joel.
Yeah.
But basically, he said, you know, leave your kindred and leave your father's house and go.
Right. What's right. Yeah, it's amazing. It's the first time we really have any interaction with Abraham at all. And, he's, you know, God tells him very clearly, you know, three commands here. Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house. Where? To the land that I will show you. And then he makes these promises in verses 2 and 3 there. And so, you know, you think, okay, well, he obeyed going from his country, Ur of the Chaldees, right? He leaves that land. He's going somewhere. God hasn't exactly showed it to him yet. There's two other commands. It says, leave your kindred, leave your father's house. And even though we don't have a lot of background information here, we understand that God knows what he's doing. God commands certain things for certain reasons. And so he's supposed to do that. So let's see how Abraham reacts to the commands. That's in verse 4. It says, so Abram went as the Lord had told him. That's good news so far.
Yeah.
But then it says, and Lot went with him. And it talks about he's 75 years old at that time. He departed Haran, all these other things. But he took Lot. Now, Lot's his nephew. That doesn't sound like he left his kindred.
Not really, no.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But what you know, Lot's dad died, you know? And you got to take care of your family. That's the right thing to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Those all seem good. It's kind of like, you know, going back even to the beginning, you think, well, what did Adam and Eve do? They just ate some fruit.
Yeah.
What's wrong with eating fruit?
They went and had their eyes opened.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of these things, they can seem good to us. And of course, the most famous, you know, big lesson on that is the book of Judges. When everyone decided, let's just do what seems good.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to use our own wisdom. Forget what God says.
You're right.
And it was a big mess.
Do what's right in your own eyes.
Especially toward the end of the book of Judges. Oh, my.
Oh, boy.
There is some crazy. And we're going to get to something just about as crazy today as we analyze this choice.
Yes.
So Abraham, you know, of course, Abram now takes Lot. And that was in direct disobedience to what God said. Now, to be a little bit on Abraham's side, he was worshiping other gods like the week before. He's like worshiping the moon probably. And then all of a sudden one of the gods, speaks to him, you know, and he decides to obey. I gotta give Abraham some credit.
Yeah.
That, you know, he did something good. And of course I think it's Joshua 24:2 that talks about him worshiping other gods and stuff. So we know that was happening, but he does obey partially. And he does so many good things. He does so many good things. And so, you know,
just like any other person.
Right,
like,
right.
He had his flaws, you know, and obviously, you know, the Bible tells us the goods and the bad, which is good.
Well, it's just finally relate. One of the evidences that the Bible is actually true is because it says, hey, these guys had a lot of problems.
Yeah, you look at Abraham's life and, you know, yeah, he did a lot of great things and he trusted God. And that was the main great thing. But yeah, there are certainly some choices he made that were
right.
Would get my wife mad at me. So we're looking at what's the choice. The choice to take Lot.
So as we have understanding, as we do give grace and mercy, let's just understand the importance of what it means to trust God and that God is good. He doesn't know what he's talking about. So here we go. Abram takes Lot with him. So let's see how this turns out. Verse 10. Let's go to verse 10. Another piece of the background here says there was a famine in the land. So Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. So nothing really necessarily wrong with that. He was just trying to survive. Now, you could make a case saying, hey, he should have trusted God to provide for him. You know, you could say something like that. But really, there was no real direct command that God was giving here. I don't see a problem with it, except that he did have Lot with him. And that was a problem with that. And so when Lot goes down there, what we'll see later on is that when he goes down to Egypt, it kind of affects him.
It does.
He looks around. He sees the prosperity of Egypt, the goodness of the land. He sees what earthly wealth can get you. And he likes that. He likes that a lot.
So then later on, you know, a few things happen. You know, we're going to skip down to chapter 13. But, you know, in the meantime, they're prospering. Abraham's You know, flocks are growing like crazy. Yeah. Lots of flocks are growing. I mean, these men are blessed, yep, and they're prospering. And they get to the point where their herdsmen are fighting all the time.
Yes.
And they're fighting over pasture ground. They're fighting over water. I mean, they're just, you know, they have too much livestock for one piece of ground, basically.
Right. Down to. Yes.
So Lot, being the bigger, or Abraham, being the bigger man, the older man, the wiser man, he comes to his nephew. He wants to do him right. And he says, hey, you know what? Why don't you choose some land? And where you go, I'll go the other way. You know, he says, separate out.
Right.
You know, we're still family. We're still going to be friends. We're still going to get together for Christmas and Thanksgiving. Yeah, right. You know, but.
Two hollies they knew nothing about yet. All right.
Yeah. They don't
even exist. Well, we get it, though. We get it. So they continue on. Let's go ahead and read that, because now we have the choice here.
So now you have Genesis 13:10. And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt in the direction of Zoar. And so you see right there a direct reference to Egypt. You know, when he was down in Egypt, he saw the water, you know, and he sees this Nile thing. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Everything's growing big and green and lush. And he sees that, and you know, so Egypt had an effect on him.
Definitely. So he chooses that right away. Hey, this is what I want. This is what I want for my life. He had plans. He had goals. Mm-hmm. And he was going to fulfill them.
And obviously he was a little selfish. He looked around for the good land and said, that's mine. You know, what he should have done was be like, Abraham, why did you take the good land? I'll go over here. After all, I'm just a tag along anyway.
And it really, I mean, for the history of the land, it was all great, but there was a better part.
Yeah.
Anyways, that he probably didn't make the best choice there. A little selfish. But it just gets worse.
Yeah. So, you know, he goes down and he settles in the plain with his tent faced towards Sodom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Sodom got in his heart.
Right.
And, you know, next you see him moved into the city. You know, then we see him sitting at the city gates, which means he's an authority at the city. But then we get even worse.
So let's read this. And then we're talking about 19:1. These two angels came to Sodom in the evening. They didn't know they were angels. They just looked like men.
So they came to rescue them, right?
Yes, in parts.
They came to get them out.
They destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah and get them out, right?
Sodom and Gomorrah was about to get burned to the ground by fire and brimstone, because if we don't somehow know this, Sodom was so evil that it has its own sin named after it.
Yes.
And so God's going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah.
And Gomorrah basically means garbage. That's what that word means.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So they both had bad connotations.
Yes.
Because of their lifestyles and things.
It was they were very wicked, and they deserved to be punished by God. And so they were going to be. Hmm. And you know, the story goes, you know, you can look it up in your own time. You know, Abraham basically bargains with God for the life of the people.
Right.
And there wasn't enough righteous people in the land or in the city for God to spare them. So the angels go down there basically to rescue Lot and take out the city.
So I'll just summarize it. But in verses 4-8, essentially, everyone learns about these two good, assumingly good-looking men that come into Lot's house and says every single man of the whole town, young and old, didn't matter, down to the last man, surrounded the house. Mm-hmm. And they said, give us those guys, we want to know them in a biblical sense,
in an unbiblical way.
That's right. And so they say, come on here. So Lot kind of steps out, closes the door behind him, and he says, hey guys, really, you can't do this. These are my guests. They're protected under my roof. I'll tell you what, I'll give you my two daughters that are married that have never known a man. Seems to be a problem there. Okay. So anyway, he says, look, you can do whatever you want with these girls. Yep. I mean, what wickedness, right? I have two daughters. I can't imagine such a thing.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
That's what poor choices do. But yeah, you can see that sin progression that Lot had, certainly. But yeah.
And of course, these guys were so far down, they weren't even interested at all. They wanted those two men that were in the house. That's what they wanted more than anything.
Yeah.
So then you travel on. This is the last passage now. Still in Genesis 19, verses 30 through 38. I think I'll summarize this as well, just for time's sake here. But essentially, Sodom and Gomorrah get destroyed. Lot's wife turns to a pillar of salt. By the way, do you know what the last words that Lot said to his wife right before she died?
What was it?
He said, "Is anyone following us?" And she looked back. Oh, okay. My. All right. All right. So, that might not be actually accurate. Okay. But
100% accurate, but
yeah, okay. Possible. So they go living in a cave, and there's a whole mess I would love to walk you through here, that would just show you just how crazy this whole thing was. But they end up living in a cave, Lot and his and those two daughters that we already mentioned before.
That's all that's left.
And the two daughters, growing up in the wisdom of Sodom and Gomorrah, and their own father's instruction, they would think, well, you know what the most important thing is. Is that our father would have a continuous lineage. And there's nobody that's going to actually marry us now because of our history and have children with us. And so our only option.
Plus, we're living in a cave and there's no one else around.
Right. And they're hiding in that cave. They don't really want to live with anybody else.
Everyone they know just got burned to the ground with fire and brimstone falling from heaven.
Right. Yeah. So, that's a rough situation.
Yeah.
So then they said, let's get dad drunk and have an incestuous relationship with him. And they did that one after another, one night and then the next night, and which is really sad. So then you come to the end here of that passage in Genesis 19. And if you start at verse 36, it says, thus both the daughters of Lot became pregnant by their father. The firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab. He is the father of the Moabites to this day. The younger also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ami. He is the father of the Ammonites to this day. And if you just do a little bit of search history in the Bible here, you'll find out the Moabites and the Ammonites caused major problems for Israel.
Big problems.
And yeah. So collectively, I'd say for the whole history, easily costing hundreds of thousands of lives because these people came up, very evil people groups. And it was all because you could trace this all back to one single decision, and that was Abraham taking Lot on his journey.
What's appeared to be a good decision,
right,
a kind decision, but it wasn't what God told him to do.
This is why we got to rely on what God says is good, that he is good. So whatever his thoughts, his actions, everything that he is, his very essence, that is good.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't rely on our own wisdom. We have to rely on his.
Yes, absolutely. So our big takeaways. What are our big takeaways, Joel?
We got four today.
Yeah.
So God's attributes are perfect, balanced, and in harmony. That's so crucial to understand.
And next thing is God did not author evil or suffering. He did not create that. He is not the author of evil. Remember, he gave us the ability to choose to love and obey, because without choices, love does not exist, and we chose to not love God and to not obey God. And because of that, it brought evil, pain, death, curses, and suffering into this world.
That third takeaway, God is purely good and the standard of good. Mm-hmm. Trusting in those two items saves you a lot of heartache and trouble in this world.
And then we have human and free, the human choice or free choice, authored evil. And, you know, it's kind of just rehashing what I just said a little bit ago. It's the author of evil and suffering, and it just keeps breeding more evil and suffering.
Right.
It's just a terrible cycle.
It's over and over again.
And the more we're evil, the more suffering comes, and the more we react to the suffering, and the less we trust God, and it just keeps continuing down the cycle. So,
well, we got to wrap up here. Thanks for listening, budding theologians. Really appreciate you.
And remember, like and subscribe and give us a 5-star review. And we will see you next month for the wrap-up of Is God Good?
Woo! Exciting.